I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. Congo, Syria, Iraq. Refugees from these countries and many others now call Baltimore home. Nearly half the refugees resettled in Maryland are children or young adults. How do school-age refugees navigate this dramatic transition? A new language, unfamiliar customs, the culture shock of life in America. We'll speak with a refugee from Eritrea who recently graduated from St. Mary's College, a teacher who works with refugee and immigrant students at Digital Harbor High School, and the head of the Baltimore office of the International Rescue Committee, a resettlement agency. Plus, we catch up with Baltimore Sun reporter Liz Bowie, whose series last year profiled refugee students at Patterson High School. It's Midday, after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. We'll be talking today about people making new lives for themselves in a new land. And of course, we're hearing the headlines of our neighbors in Ellicott City who will have to remake their lives, their homes and businesses after the horrific flood Saturday night. Our hearts go out to them. Now to our main topic. Refugee students arriving in Baltimore face many obstacles, a new language, an unfamiliar environment, the culture shock of life in America, the difficulty of leaving friends and family behind. 9 months ago, the Baltimore Sun published a three-part series about the challenges facing teenage immigrants and refugees at East Baltimore's Patterson High School. The series won awards for both reporter Liz Bowie and photographer Amy Davis, including a national award from the Education Writers Association. I spoke with Liz Bowie last week and asked what she'd heard from readers about the series.
After the series ran, we got a lot of feedback from readers. They sent hundreds of emails talking about their own experiences and also wanted to reach out to many of the immigrant kids that I'd profiled at Patterson High School. They also donated their time and money. I think there was about $12,000 that was donated to students and the school itself. That money went to buy new curriculum and also give some kids some field trips. There was money also donated to each of the individual students, and some of them are using it for college and others just needed the cash.
You spent 8 months getting to know students at Patterson High School. How would you summarize for listeners what you learned and what surprised you?
I was expecting students to have difficulty adjusting to the United States, but I never envisioned that I would find so many students with such profound trauma, trauma that seemed unlike anything I'd ever witnessed in schools before. And I also was particularly surprised at how difficult it was given social media and cell phones and Facebook and WhatsApp, how easy it is for those students to be in touch with their families back home. Unlike 100 years ago when you left on a boat and you never saw your family again, today people can come and be in touch with their families every hour of every day. And I think it makes it much more difficult to really leave their homes behind.
The three students whom you profiled in particular, one from Iraq, one from Guatemala, another from the Central African Republic, how did they react to the series?
They loved it. The girl from the Central African Republic, I'm not sure she was able to read it. Her name is Monique, and she has made huge progress in the last year. When I spoke to her last, she was completely fluent in English, or nearly fluent in English, spoken English, which is just stunning to me. I hope that someday she'll be able to read it and understand it. Excel Estrada, the Latino boy, has made enormous progress as well. His English is very good, both written and spoken, and he just spent 3 weeks at the Johns Hopkins program for talented youth. He's hoping to apply to college next year and he's one of the top students in his grade at Patterson now. A really remarkable story. What's holding him back is his legal status. And then there's Narmeen, who graduated in June and is now headed to community college.
So you've kept in touch with him?
Oh, yes. Yes, I will always be in touch with him.
That was Baltimore Sun education reporter Liz Bowie. Her three-part series on refugee and immigrant students at Baltimore's Patterson High School ran last November. A link to the series is available on the Midday page at WYPR.org. Today, what challenges do young refugees encounter at school while juggling a new language, classes, work, and making new friends? How do the school system and the Refugee Settlement Agency try to make that adjustment smooth? What are the biggest challenges? Here with me in the studio is Ruben Chandrasekhar, Executive Director of the International Rescue Committee's offices in Baltimore and Silver Spring. The IRC is a refugee resettlement agency. Welcome back to the show, Ruben.
Thank you, Sheila.
Nice to see you. We're joined by phone by Kathleen Callahan, who teaches English for speakers of other languages, ESOL, at Digital Harbor High School in South Baltimore. She has taught ESOL in Baltimore for 17 years since Kathleen began teaching at Digital Harbor in 2002. Its ESOL program has grown from 5 to 200 students. Kathleen Callahan, welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you could join us. And also here with me in the studio is Mulubahan Bare, who just graduated from St. Mary's College of Maryland. He is a graduate of Patterson High School. Mulu came with his family to Baltimore after living in an Ethiopian refugee camp for 5 years. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Mulu, so you are originally from Eritrea.
Yes, I'm from Eritrea.
On Africa's East Coast. But you and your family had been living in an Ethiopian refugee camp before coming to the United States. Tell me what took you to the refugee camp, what the situation was, and then what it was like in the camp.
Well, we left Eritrea because of government persecution. My family lived in a rural area in the southern part of Eritrea, a small village called Nedwe. And that's where we were raised and grew up. And my older brothers, my older siblings were forced to go to the military while they were in school. So they had to flee Eritrea at that age, younger age actually, when they were high schoolers. So in 2005, there was a new policy that the government came up with, and it was that every parent has to pay $50,000 NACFA, which is our country's money, which is a big money for us in Eritrea, and we don't even make that much money. We live off a farm, so my mom couldn't afford it, and she was alone. My dad died like a few years before that, so she had to flee Eritrea as well. So she left Eritrea with me and my younger sister, Kibrit.
And what was it like in the refugee camp?
It was difficult. It was tough. Not knowing what life is going to be and expecting rescission every day from an agency and not even sure that if it's going to come the next month. So it was difficult watching my older brothers and my mom without work. And so it was really difficult to live in that life.
Was there school in the refugee
camp?
Yes,
there was a school. I actually attended school there.
And so you were there 5 years in the
yes.
camp, and then you came to the United States. What's the biggest thing about getting to the United States? What was the biggest challenge? What did you have to cope with right away?
Adjusting to the culture. It's a big for me at that moment. It was hard for like my family, especially my mom, at that age to just immerse into like a new culture or the new language. We didn't know. Like literally nobody, like when we first arrived, so it was kind of difficult.
You didn't speak any English.
I spoke very little English.
You spoke
my
a little.
Sister and my mom didn't. So I was the one who was able to try to communicate with the caseworker or even other people at that moment.
And that was how many years ago?
6 years now, a little over 6 years now.
So yeah. you were how old when you came?
I was 17, about to turn 18.
And so you went directly into high school?
Yes, I went to Patterson High School.
With limited English?
Yes.
It seems like you've accomplished a whole lot. Ruben Chandrasekhar, when you hear Mulu's story, does this sound like a typical refugee story?
I believe so. You know, first I just want to say how great it is to see Mulu again. I remember being there, you know, in the office when he arrived, and just hearing about his amazing progress in Patterson High School over the years that he was there, including being president of his class when he graduated, and being a valedictorian as well, and then, you know, hearing that he had a scholarship to go to St. Mary's. It's just been great to watch and enjoy his progress from afar. And to answer your question, Sheila, I think, you know, Mulu's clearly a huge success story, and I wouldn't want to say that every single refugee child will have the same pathway that he has had. But I think in the last 12 years that I've done this work, I see refugee children and adults being successful in their life over the long term. And children, most of all, are very quick to adapt to the new circumstances that they find themselves in, be it a new school system or a new culture, and oftentimes are the ones helping their parents to move forward.
Kathleen Callahan, as you're listening to us, to this, what goes through your mind in terms of the students that you work with at Digital Harbor?
Well, hi, everybody. So Mulu's story is very familiar to me. We have a lot of students at Digital Harbor also who come to the U.S. as refugees from Eritrea, also from Ethiopia, from the Congo. But probably our greater number of students coming recently are immigrants coming from Central America. And what really runs through my mind is that those students, they don't have the official refugee status and recognition from the U.S. government, but they are coming with pretty much exactly the same stories of trauma and difficulty and adjustment, and also have many of the same success stories, but they don't have a lot of support right now. So that's really something that we're struggling with in the schools right now.
I'm glad you raised that. Let me ask Ruben Chandrasekhar about that particular. Obviously, we wouldn't have refugee status if it wasn't important, or wasn't seen as important to help people make the transition. But how does that play out for students, the difference that Kathleen Callahan pointed out to us between a student whose life story, it feels to them like they're refugees, but they don't have the legal status?
No, it's extremely difficult. You know, you have thousands of children fleeing persecution from the Northern Triangle countries of Central America. That's Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. And only recently, about a year ago, the U.S. State Department opened up a new refugee program to allow the parents who are already in the U.S. Apply for their children to be considered for refugee status, instead of those children traveling, you know, through Mexico and crossing the border without authorization because they're fleeing violence. So it's extremely important that the State Department continues to expand the Central American Minors Program so that Central American kids who are really facing lots of gang-related narco terror, really, in those countries, have a legal pathway of coming here as a refugee. And when they do, they can avail themselves of the services that we offer, which is wraparound case management support, youth caseworkers to help enroll them into school, and working in partnership with organizations like Baltimore City Community College and Soccer Without Borders, offering many refugee children after-school academic programs and art enrichment.
We need to take a break here. There's lots more to talk about. And listeners, we'd love you to be part of this conversation. Did your family come to the United States as refugees? What was your experience adjusting to this environment here? What challenges did you face at school? You're welcome to call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. What challenges do young refugees face when they resettle in Baltimore? How do teachers help them acclimate to what may be a vastly different environment and culture for them? I'm speaking with Ruben Chandrasekhar, Executive Director of the Maryland Offices of the International Rescue Committee, with Mulu Barre, a refugee from Eritrea, and Kathleen Callahan, who teaches English for speakers of other languages, ESOL, at Digital Harbor High School in South Baltimore. You can be part of this conversation. Do you teach students who are immigrants or refugees? What do you do to help them feel comfortable in your classroom? Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Kathleen Callahan, it occurs to me that we may have stacked the deck here because obviously Mulu is, I'll say it, even if he wouldn't, brilliant. And clearly not every young refugee who shows up in school brings what Mulu brought to it. What are the biggest academic challenges that you see your ESOL students having, in addition to the language, or because of the language?
Right. Well, I mean, the language obviously is the first and most noticeable challenge that our students face, and it's really it's very hard to summarize, because the students are not, it's not monolithic. Every student really brings a unique story, and there's a wide variety among our students. I will say that one thing that does happen a lot with our students coming from Central America is that due to the violence and danger that they were dealing with in their home country, a lot of the students, and again, I want to stress, not all, but a lot of the students have had to be out of school for a while, not because they wanted to be, but because literally it was too dangerous for them to leave the house and go to school.
Wow.
So we've had students come in who, had very interrupted education, and that can be a real challenge for them, trying to acclimate, especially at the high school level, trying to get on board for graduation. So that's one really big challenge that we have, that the students have been out of school for a while.
When I talked to Liz Bowie about her the time she spent getting to know students at Patterson High School, she talked about how some students had been so out of school, either because they needed to work or, as you said, because it was not safe for them to go to school, that just the most basic skills like holding a pencil or knowing that most languages you're going to read first the left page in a book and then the right, that those were things that teachers were needing to teach high school kids. Do you have that experience at Digital Harbor?
We have had that experience, sure. And that can be for students coming from Central America, or if they're coming from a different alphabet, like, Arabic for the left to right, to the right to left issue. Also just things like, young people who are 15, 16, 17 years old haven't been going to school for a few years, just something like, this is a classroom and you need to sit still for a certain amount of time and give your attention to the lesson, is something that can be a struggle. And students, might be coming from a very, very different educational experience where teachers were not seen as helpful or friendly or safe necessarily. So they don't necessarily respond immediately to the teacher as someone who is there to help them, they do pretty quickly, I think, realize that we are there to help them. And they really, really appreciate that. I had one young man say to me, you know, well, where I come from, you know, the teachers, you know, didn't help you. You know, if you did something wrong, they would hit you. But I see here, meaning the U.S., that, you know, the teachers really are here to help me. And that was, you know, I was so glad to hear him say that. But it was also kind of heartbreaking to realize that he had to come over that hurdle to even realize that. And, of course, that's going to, you know, translate issues in the classroom. So a lot of those things.
Mulu Bahre, as I said, it sounds, I'm leaping to the conclusion, but you should tell me that you didn't, that you're, that you were academically pretty well prepared to slip into the courses at Patterson High School.
Yeah, I would say that. It wasn't too challenging to me. I just needed like the extra support from my teachers, which I got actually. And I also had like, I was very interested. I was afraid that I was not going to get to high school at that age because my caseworker, when I first interacted with her, she told me, you probably would need to work and support your mom because this the support that the IRC that provide is only for about 8 months. And after that, you will need to support your family. So I was very scared. So as soon as I got that opportunity, I was just driven to continue my education, and I had a really good communication with my teachers, and they had a really good support that that helped me succeed at that school.
Did you work part time in high school, or were you able to go full time?
I went full time, and I also worked part time.
What kind of job?
I used to work at a Giant, like I was a clerk.
Okay, yeah. And I'm sure some listeners are curious. I said you just graduated from St. Mary's College. I didn't say what you studied.
I studied psychology and anthropology minor.
And so what's next?
No, I'm taking a gap year, looking for a job, actually. I'm back on my old internship. They're very supportive, and they want me to give me that opportunity to search for a job. So I'm looking for a job. After a gap year, I will be going for graduate school to pursue master's in public health.
In public health?
Yes.
This is Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cassett. The voice you just heard is Mulu Bahre, a refugee from Eritrea. Here with me in the studio is Ruben Chandrasekhar, Executive Director of the Maryland Offices of the International Rescue Committee, Resettlement Agency. And on the phone with us is Kathleen Callahan, who teaches English for speakers of other language at Digital Harbor High School in South Baltimore. You're welcome to join this conversation. What do you think most Americans don't understand about refugees, especially young refugees? Call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Noor has called us from Baltimore. Noor, welcome to the show. Noor, are you still with us?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Noor. I'm calling from Baltimore County.
I need a little more volume from you, Noor. We're having trouble hearing you.
Okay. I'm calling from UMBC in Baltimore County.
I think it may be a problem with your phone because occasionally we get a loud syllable. Noor, maybe you can try calling us back. Karina has called us from Baltimore.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you fine.
Hi, this is Karina calling from Baltimore. I'm calling in both a personal and professional capacity. Personal in that my family came here as refugees back in 1994 from Kazakhstan and really benefited from the services of the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society and being part of a big refugee flow that I think speaks to this day and age that was highly recognized, but for some reason we're not recognizing the Central American refugee crisis as a crisis. And these children are treated with a lesser status, and the fact that their legal status is that much harder to come by, I don't think is as highly recognized. And both from a professional capacity, I do a lot of research on immigration policy, and in particular this past year I did a lot of work on unaccompanied minors, and I wanted to highlight a particular example that maybe service providers listening on the phone can really benefit from, and that's from Oakland, California. Back in 2014, when the crisis was really hitting its peak, They surveyed their school population and recognized the need to hire an unaccompanied minor support services specialist. And what she does, it's wraparound services. So with people who don't necessarily come through the IRC or the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society or Catholic Charities, but they come to the school. And from the school, she recognizes that, oh, these children have court cases that they're missing. Oh, these children don't have coats that for when the winter comes. And so by having that centralized enrollment and having that particular individual to help the people is actually a lot more beneficial towards minors that maybe don't get recognized otherwise.
Karina, I appreciate your bringing that to our attention. Ruben, I'm not sure I understood the full impact, but I'm sure you can make it clear to me. I mean, Karina seems to be saying that over and above the typical services, there's like an extra kind of support that many refugees need.
Yes. Yeah, so with the Central American minors situation, there are really two flows. The majority of the minors are crossing the border because they don't have an avenue to come here as refugees, because that refugee program, the Central American minors program that the State Department started, is relatively new. So the thousands of kids who fled violence and persecution have crossed the border into the U.S. They're typically detained at the border, and then if they have family residing in the U.S., typically a parent or a relative who's documented, they're then released to that family member while their immigration status is being determined through the court system. And many, you know, there's thousands of children in Maryland from El Salvador who are under this situation where they're waiting for their court case to come up. And in the meantime, they're attending school. And this is where I think having the school system recognize the need for somebody to help these kids and families navigate that court system to determine whether or not they would get refugee status is an important one, as well as to deal with some of the trauma that they're coming with. Just like refugee children, they've witnessed a tremendous amount of violence, certainly loss of family, and things of that nature, and it's really important both for the school system and the healthcare system to provide for their mental health needs.
Can I chime in here for just a second, Sheila?
Sure. Yes, Catherine.
So I just wanted to say I really appreciate Karina's call and messages there, and everything that she said. I would entirely second that. And the issue really with us, at least here in Baltimore City, is
Kathleen, we're losing your contact. The issue, can you try again? And we may have to replace the call. The issue in Baltimore City is
that the school system is beginning to recognize the needs of those students, but it's a very slow process to get those support services, you know, funded and staffed and in place. So, we would love to have, you know, that support service specialist like they had in Oakland, California. We have some staff on hand who are beginning to provide those services in some organizations to deal with the unaccompanied minors and their situations. It's just, we just need so much more. It's just not nearly enough right now.
And Sheila, I'd just like to add to Kathleen's statement that Baltimore City schools, historically, in the 6 years that we've been working with them, have been extremely responsive to the needs of refugee children in particular, and in many cases have hired community liaisons, so former refugee adults who speak Tigrinya, like Mulu's language, or Arabic, or Nepali, to work as liaisons. They're actually school employees, and they communicate messages between the parents and the school system to make sure that children have the support that they need, and that the school is able to support both the parents and the kids. So in spite of being under-resourced, I think hats off to ESOL teachers in Baltimore City, and certainly to the leadership for stepping up and hiring these community liaisons.
And is it your impression, and Kathleen Callahan, weigh in on this if you like, is it your impression that most of the money that goes into that is local school money, or does the federal government help with these resources?
Well, from
there's definitely federal funding as well as local funding. Ruben, do you want to?
No, go ahead, Kathleen.
That's just what I was going to say. I mean, they're definitely. I don't know what the exact formulas are, but I know that there is definitely federal funding as well as local funding. But you know, school systems, you know, they're big ships, and it takes them a while to make course adjustments. You know, so. You know, sometimes we're lagging behind a little bit, the needs that come up. So I think that's why, you know, we're seeing some of that delay. We're beginning to provide those services. It's just that we need more and we need it soon.
Mulu, when you came to the United States, how different was the experience than what you expected?
Definitely it was very different. I don't know how I would actually major it, but it was different. That, like, I was very excited for the new opportunity that I was presented with when I first arrived, and like coming to America, a country where there's a lot of opportunities where you can, like, literally be independent and change your life. But at the time, it was also very difficult, both socially, financially, and going out there and not feeling safe was also another issue, because you can be. At that age, like, all we need was, like, I felt like when I first came in, I was like, I'm going to play soccer and just go to school and interact with people, like, make new friends. So at the beginning, that wasn't the case. It was a bit different, and you look different, and, like, especially at school, like, riding public bus schools, there wasn't that integration between, like, American students at that time and refugee students. So there was a lot of violence that I saw my friends, like other refugees, were facing, and also myself that I faced. So it was kind of difficult at that particular time. And as you learn the culture, as you interact, as you learn the language, it progressed and it got better.
But it was a challenge. Kathleen Callahan, what kinds of things do you do to make students feel comfortable in your class? How can you address some of this?
Right. Well, there's sort of a host of different things we do. I mean, it starts from, you know, the very beginning of the registration process and just really welcoming the students in and trying to make sure that they get the best and right classes that they need. We have, especially in the last few years, really adapted our class offerings to try to provide classes to students that are going to both help them earn the credits that they need for graduation, because, again, in high school, they have a very limited amount of time to try to get ready to graduate while they're also learning English, so that's a big challenge. So we provide classes with, like, co-teaching models or what we call sheltered content, so that the student can learn, say, for example, about biology while they're also learning English at the same time and still earn their credit that they need in biology towards graduation. Teacher training is a really big piece, too, trying to train and educate mainstream teachers of various content areas so that they can provide, you know, the most appropriate kind of instructional environment for English learners. So doing all of those things, also having programs that really recognize and celebrate, you know, what these students bring to the table. They bring incredible, they might have their challenges, but they also bring incredible resources and an incredible richness and diversity.
I'm going to interrupt you at that point because we need to take a short break, and there's a caller waiting who wants to, I think, double down on exactly that point. So when we come back, we'll talk more about what resources would benefit refugee students and their teachers, time, money, smaller class sizes. We're taking calls at 410-662-8780 and emails at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Kast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the challenges that refugee students face adjusting to life in Baltimore. I'm speaking with Ruben Chandrasekhar, Executive Director of the Maryland Offices of the International Rescue Committee, with Mulu Barre, who came to the United States in 2010 after living in a refugee camp in Ethiopia, and Kathleen Callahan, who teaches English for speakers of other languages at Digital Harbor High School in South Baltimore. We're taking calls from you at 410-662-8780, emails at midday@wypr.org. Mark has phoned us from Baltimore. Mark, welcome to Midday.
Yes. I just wanted to talk to some of the panelists and maybe get an idea of, given this political climate today, and I certainly don't want to bring politics into this because we're having a great conversation, but given the politics of today's climate, I'm wondering what type of programs are being set up to help educate the public, because they're getting a very warped view of immigrants and undocumented immigrants as well as documented ones. And I'm just curious what kind of programs that are being set up to educate the public in this political environment. I'll take my answer.
Mark, I appreciate you raising that. Mulu? Would you like to respond to Mark about what you think needs to be said in this political climate?
I think a lot of immigrants like myself, we're not aware of how to get involved in like the community integration or even like getting involved in the politics itself. So I think what needs to happen is like a lot of education programs and a lot of programming where they can engage and learn. And for me, I recently participated in the LIRS Academy in D.C., and that academy was basically ways to bring refugees and how to...
Let me interrupt and ask, IRS Academy?
LIRS, it's the Lutheran Refugees and Immigrant Services.
LRS, okay.
Yeah, and that is a way to bring out leaders, refugee leaders or immigrant leaders, and allow them to create community associations for refugees within the cities that they live in. Myself and another refugee from Sudan, Abdul Hamid, we are working together to create this organization that to bring this organization, and that allows all refugees to come together and tackle all the problems in a different ways: employment, education, mental health issues, all these sorts of problems. So, and political involvement is another issue that we are interested in touching on, because it's very important that I'm a refugee. But also, I recently become a citizen, so I'm an American. But how do I participate as an American here, even though I come from a different country? So I want to be able to take advantage of the rights that I have and get involved in getting, like, have the belongingness. So a lot of people are away from that, and they don't feel like they belong here, because they may be that they're not educated. Maybe that they don't know how to get involved in the politics. So... So we're trying to create all these programs that would allow us to engage refugees and immigrants into that environment.
Ruben, you look like you wanted to jump in.
Yes, I think there's two issues here. One is what Mulu has said, is that, you know, once refugees get here and become citizens, you know, providing them with a pathway to get more civically engaged is an important resource for us to find. And most of refugee resettlement services are very short term. They're geared towards getting, you know, kids into school or parents into a job and helping them to move forward. The second issue that the caller has mentioned is the political environment. And I think, you know, the IRC's response has been to be engaged with media. We do quite a bit of media work just to inform the general public that refugees are fleeing persecution, they're fleeing terror, and they're seeking nothing but safety and a chance to begin a new life. And the U.S. refugee resettlement system is the most sophisticated system on the planet. And refugees who are allowed and welcomed into the U.S. Go through a tremendous screening process in order to ensure that people coming here don't pose any kind of threat to the U.S. And I think most people don't quite understand that, and some politicians who do feign ignorance.
Jackie has called us from Baltimore. Jackie, welcome to Midday.
Good afternoon. Is it afternoon? Yes.
Yes.
Are you there?
Yes. Okay. We hear you, Jackie.
I'm pretty emotional about this. I'm presently teaching adults, mostly without documentation. And when I hear their stories of what they have run away from, it's unbelievable.
These are people from Central America?
Mostly from Central America. So we're talking about what they're running away from, persecution and terror. I think we need to put a reality of what those words actually mean for people. I'm going to give you an example of what I have been told. So an adult tells me that their children were in a classroom. A drug person would come in with a gun, or maybe a couple of people would come in with a gun, chase the teacher away, and they would choose students to take away, girls for girl purposes, boys to become part of the drug issue. I mean, to become part of the drug gangs. So if the parents, I mean, this is, let's put a face on what this persecution and terror are. Those are nice words. I call them, they're reified. We don't know what that really means. So if you find out that your kid was taken away for those kinds of purposes, you really understand. So now I'm talking to an adult who's here illegally, however he got here or so, and they are working their bones off with jobs that are minimum wage, very dangerous jobs frequently. And then they are sending money back to their families to survive because the industries have folded. It's heartbreaking when you hear about this. So I'm actually, I've got a background of teaching English as a second language going back about 30 years. So working with the adults and understanding what they've come from, I think is important. I think when
Jackie, I appreciate your bringing putting your experience into this conversation. Kathleen Callahan, I'm sure you've heard the same kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
And so.
Yes.
Kathleen, we're losing your line.
Yes. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Now I do.
Okay. I was just going to thank Jackie for her comment. I think that's really important to think about, you know, what it is that people are trying to escape, and that any parent would do anything, right, to help their child be safe and to have a better future. And, you know, when I ask my students why they've come here, you know, I hear some of those stories like Jackie said, and then time and time again, you know, they say for a better future and for education and to help their families.
What Jackie put on the table for us, as well as what Liz Bowie from the Baltimore Sun described, the trauma that so many refugees are coping with. I presume that mental health supports are a big part of what refugee students need, Ruben.
Absolutely, yes. You know, we have two dedicated youth caseworkers who help enroll kids into school and help to teach them how to navigate the school system. We help the parents also learn about the school system, and we provide professional development for teachers as part of our refugee youth programming. And all of this, I think, helps ease that transition and that initial anxiety that both parents and students have. But the issue of mental health trauma that kids have faced is going largely unaddressed, not because of not wanting to address it, but because we lack resources to do so. Adult refugees who come into Baltimore are screened for PTSD, depression, and anxiety. If they score a certain, if they score positive for those, they have access to mental health resources that they're referred to. But children are not screened.
Why is that?
Well, it's just that we haven't put together the system, as Kathleen had said. While we recognize mental health needs are very, very important, we've addressed the adult needs, oftentimes hoping that they will stabilize their families and help them to get into work and move forward in their life. But we also recognize the intense need for mental health support for children, And we are working closely with a few foundations right now, the Strauss Foundation, for example, to explore a partnership to address the mental health needs of youth so that they can be screened for anxiety or depression or PTSD and then referred to culturally competent therapists who understand the refugees' backgrounds to be able to then address those needs.
And Kathleen Callahan, do I understand correctly that the Baltimore school system also has a partnership, I think, with Bayview, right, with to get mental health support for kids who need it?
Yes. Yes, this is something this past school year was the first year that we really benefited from that. So, for example, at Digital Harbor, we had one bilingual social worker who was assigned to us, but only for 1.5 days a week. So she was split between three different schools. And she did, it was great to have her there, and she was able to provide services that our students really needed. She did that mental health screening. She did the trauma screening. She ran some groups for some of our young people, and also starting to work with parents, doing parent groups and issues, because that's a really big issue for our young people, is that they've been separated from their parents oftentimes for many, many years, and coming together as teenagers and you know, parents.
Okay, we're losing you off and on, Kathleen. We have just a couple of minutes left, and you mentioned Mulu, that you had hoped to play soccer, and you mentioned, Ruben, Soccer Without Borders. Can you just briefly tell us what that's about?
Soccer Without Borders. I was actually involved, in the beginning, but at a certain time, a little bit after my involvement, I was off the age, so I couldn't actually play with the team. But that was it is a great program, it still is. So it was a way, bringing all refugees, with the same passion, playing soccer was, it was a great way for us to de-stress. We don't realize it, but, we connect with one another. We have a common problem of coming here and adjusting to new culture. So I think it was a great program, support program. The program also did not just focus on soccer. I remember the coach, Jill, coming to my house when I first got involved and came to my house to drop me off, and that she had to deal with a lot of papers that my mom was like, what is this envelope? What are these envelopes about? What are they trying to say? Because I couldn't understand exactly what they were trying to say. So they are also involved in personal level, where they provide support to one-to-one individual, also the family. So it's a great support program. But now they're starting it for adults. One, there is 1% and starting for young adults. So I'm really excited about that.
So you hope to get back into it. I'm really grateful to all of you for discussing all of this with us today. There clearly is a big challenge, and especially as one of our callers mentioned, in this political climate. Kathleen Callahan, who teaches English for speakers of other languages at Digital Harbor High School in South Baltimore and has for 17 years, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Ruben Chandrasekhar, Executive Director of the Baltimore and Silver Spring offices of the International Rescue Committee. I always learn something from you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And Mulu Barre, new graduate of St. Mary's College of Maryland. Best of luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We heard earlier from the Baltimore Sun's education reporter, Liz Bowie. We will link to her series, Unsettled Journeys, on the Midday Show page. I want to also thank the DIS for supplying lunch today for Midday Guests. The DIS is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. Features signature burgers, wings, steaks, jumbo lump crab cakes. Open for lunch and dinner with breakfast on the weekends on the web at thedisbaltimore.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow for political scientist Melissa Deckman of Washington College. We'll be talking about politics, women, and women on the right. Join us for that tomorrow. I'm Sheila Cast. Have a great afternoon.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.